average Joe, so to speak, citizens, getting involved in aspects of day trading. And one of the things that was the way that it was presented initially in terms of the GameStop situation in general, of the dramatic rise of the stock value and so forth, there were other companies that were involved in this, were through social media platforms, were people teaming up as a means to then stick it to Wall Street.
Such was the popularity of the Wall Street Bets page that its subscribers shot up from 3 million members in January 2021 to over 8 million in early February, showing that with such large numbers of people all buying the same stock at the same time, the manipulation of the market performed took even the most professional stock traders by surprise. One of the main platforms for buying and selling shares on a small scale was the Robinhood app. However, such was the lobbying pressure on them by the corridors of power in Wall Street and other financial institutions that they were forced to step in. They blocked transactions involving GameStop, which by now had seen prices of shares rise by 140%. I'm pleased to say that joining me in the studio is Current Affairs and Impact Analyst Mohan Abedin. Welcome.
Thank you.
As well as Larry Bridwell. He's a professor of international business at Pace University. Okay, welcome to you both. First to you, Professor. We're looking at amateur investors who organized over Reddit and other online forums, targeted shares of companies, including GameStop, that have been short-sold by these hedge funds. Now, that is how this is reported. But that might be very hard for the average viewer to actually understand. Can you please explain this to us in layman terms, if you can, please?
Well, the controversy is on the little people in the stock market who they believe that when they couldn't buy GameStop because of Robinhood, that the big hedge funds had stepped on the little people. And this has attracted an enormous media attention. And what had happened is that the big hedge funds had shorted the stock, GameStop, because they assumed it was going to go down, so they made bets for it to go down. And then there was, and this is an example of social media, there was a chat room that a lot of young people had shopped at GameStop. And so they thought that it had a good future, and they were talking about when they used to visit it and the games they used to buy, etc. So they started buying the stock, and then that created all kinds of problems for those hedge funds that had shorted it. And then Robinhood stopped receiving orders, and the whole thing crashed, and that started the whole process of the Wall Street hurting the average little investor.
All right. Obviously, still kind of difficult to understand what has happened. But Mohan, this is an unprecedented example based on what we have seen unfold, how the general public has been actually able to shake an establishment and powerful institution to the core. Do you think such examples will be seen again in the future? Is it going to happen again? Or will the powers that be that are within Wall Street and other global stock exchanges actually take action to make sure that repeat doesn't happen?
Well, I think it can happen again, and of course your guess is quite right. You know, the establishment in Wall Street and its allies across the financial banking sector are very strong. But look, social media is a powerful tool, and the GameStop Reddit saga has demonstrated that. Reddit really is very powerful in terms of how it can manipulate user public opinion, how it can coalesce people who are otherwise very disparate in their thinking and in their attitudes, can bring them together.
Okay, we're going to now take a look at another part of this whole saga that has unfolded in terms of what has been said. The saga got the attention of U.S. lawmakers. Now, mind you, we didn't really hear about the SEC. That's the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. That's a large independent agency of the U.S. federal government that was created to follow the stock market crash in the 1920s and to protect investors and the national banking system. But that didn't happen, but we heard from U.S. lawmakers get involved rather pretty quickly, as you're about to see. It did not take long for the saga to turn political when lawmakers from both sides of the spectrum in the U.S. joined the debate. with some saying that by placing restrictions on the buying and selling of stock was unacceptable.
But if removing the revenues that you make from a payment for order flow would cause the removal of free commissions, doesn't that mean that trading on Robinhood isn't actually free to begin with? Because you're just hiding the cost in terms of potentially poor execution or the cost of lost rebates to your customers.
Does Citadel's lobbyist right now been hired to oppose federal proposals to financial transaction tax because it would make high frequency trading less profitable?
I want to know how each of the witnesses here today and the companies they represent contributed to the historic trading events in January.
Americans are far more sophisticated, informed, and capable than folks in D.C. give them credit for. And it's time our securities laws treat them that way.
Back with me in the studio is Mohan Abedin and Larry Bridwell. Welcome back to you both. Larry, when it comes down to it, one issue is at hand, and that's it, is whether Robinhood actually conspired with the big Wall Street hedge funds, as it was reported, to screw over the everyday folks who are suddenly striking it rich with investments like GameStop.
Well, this is almost like a courtroom drama because Robinhood's a relatively new company. They had not anticipated. This is what the argument they're making. And all of a sudden, they get all these orders, and they didn't have the capital. So it took them a couple of days to get the capital. Now, the CEO of Robinhood saying, I'm just an innocent victim of circumstances. And then other people are saying, well, you have this linkage with the hedge funds. So I think we're going to have kind of a courtroom-type hearing to find out what the real story is. But there is speculation that Robinhood had colluded with the hedge funds, but the CEO denies this. So we'll have to find out what the investigations find out.
Yeah, indeed. Well, hopefully there's going to be some conclusion to that.
Yeah.
Mohan, it's been known that Wall Street, which is comprised of these hedge funds and money managers, they don't really care about the everyday people, do they, in terms of the type of trading they do? I mean, we could take a look at the 2008 financial crisis, how that unfolded. Why doesn't the Fed or the law reel in these shady practices instead of just fining them? It seems like they're good at fining them. They pay the fine, these whatever entities you want to call them, and then they move on with business as usual.
But fining is the default punishment for these type of crimes in the United States. And what tends to happen, of course, is that the American regulators, they impose very, very hefty fines on international transgressors. You've seen that in the fines they impose on banks, for instance, who have assisted countries or individuals under sanction to evade sanction. The fines can be astronomical there, really crippling. But in terms of the actual U.S. market, no, the fines are not very harsh. And this goes, I mean, I think your question goes into the heart of the matter. If these are criminal acts, I think everybody agrees that they are, and they can be very damaging, why aren't people going to jail for it?
Indeed. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, now is a good time to take a look at some of the protests that actually took place on what many see as Wall Street watching out for number one, namely themselves, while the average Joe is the one that suffers the losses.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're called Robinhood, right? So, yeah, it's kind of ironic that they're helping the big guys.
It's pretty crazy because I look at the whole GameStop thing with the stocks as a revenge of the nerds kind of attack on the big boys in Wall Street and against a lot of the big trading firms that are out there.
I think it the little man finally got an ounce of what they deserve, and it was the assholes in there that took it from them. They delisted it. Ameritrade, Robinhood, Webull, they all can't stand to have the little guy win, and that pissed me off, and that's why it's the suits. It's buy Bitcoin, and it's always been that for decades. It shows you that you can be your own bank. You can do your own transactions, verifiable, permissionless, decentralized. It's the future of commerce, and the assholes in there, they haven't caught on to it yet. but Grayscale, Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy, they're starting to dip their feet in, and this is the future of finance right here.
Welcome back to Economic Divide with me, Kabet Ahwai. It's time now to take a look at some of the other economic headlines hitting the front pages in our info news section. Our first story takes us to the aviation industry, where the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic is still taking its toll. Orders for new aircraft all but dried up in January, as just four commercial orders, aircraft orders were placed, down from some 296 that were placed back in January of 2020. Adding insult to injury, all four planes ordered were freight types, and that shows just how bad the industry is suffering. Well, it seems that each week there is no escaping the fortunes of the cryptocurrency Bitcoin, which has once again smashed records by surpassing the $58,000 mark. As of the recording of this show, the value has now risen more than 90% since the start of January, pushing its total market value to above $1 trillion. Mind you, again, as of the recording of this show, prices have actually come down. There's been about 20% drop. Next story, the Institute of International Finance has estimated that the COVID-19 outbreak added to global debt, with the figure soaring to an all-time high of $281 trillion. The debt-to-GDP ratio increased by 35 percentage points to 356%. Estimates suggest that another $10 trillion will be added to this figure by the end of the year. And finally, ties between the EU and Russia are hitting lows on both a political and an economic level, with the EU's largest powerhouse, Germany, reporting that trade is down with Russia. Business is down 22% year-on-year to $44.9 billion, with German exports to Russia down 13.1% and Russian imports to Germany down 29.9%. Okay, make sure to watch our upcoming episode of Economic Divide, where we cover the EU-Russia relationship in more detail. Well, it's time now to take a look at our final report of the day, as we examine how traders are looking at alternative forms of investment outside the normal realms of the stock market. The 1980s brought a period of global capitalism that saw the birth of the get-rich-quick ideology, with bankers, investors, realtors, and traders making the most of the boom days. But this was not limited to and restricted to just the personal working for the big banks and stock exchanges around the world. Everyday people also wanted to make money, and so the birth of home enterprise was witnessed, with people starting to invest in small ventures, ranging from buying and selling vehicles, cosmetics, and a host of other things. With the world able to now obtain information in real time, much like the decline of travel agencies as people book their holidays at home online, the GameStop saga could also be the birth of a decline in stock exchanges, with everyone now aware of just how easy it is to invest their money.
I think certainly it appears that, you know, the regulators are certainly taking a look, as they've said publicly, on, you know, the recent market action. It's hard to say whether additional regulations would be required. Certainly, again, from my vantage point, you know, really it's about making sure that the playing field is level.
Welcome back to the studio, current affairs and impact analyst Mohan Abedin and Larry Bridwell, professor of international business at Pace University. Larry, on a deeper level, doesn't this whole affair show how manipulation happens on Wall Street? You're looking at manipulation that is pretty deep, from insider trading, artificial price inflation, just to name a couple. How deep is this manipulation that's happening on Wall Street, do you think?
This is a major issue, and it's especially accentuated by this phenomenon called private equity. And the 500 companies went from being public, where you buy and sell the stocks, to being private, so it's no longer in the stock market. And of those 500 companies, over a 20-year period, 20% of them went bankrupt. And in the public companies, it was only 2%. So these private equity firms, as part of the stock market manipulation, they take the cash out of the companies, and that makes them weaker. And there are some prominent examples of this. There was this famous toy company for children in the United States called Toys R Us. They were taken private, went bankrupt. Two of the largest retailers in the history of the United States, called Sears and Kmart, also went bankrupt when they were taken private. And even the Hertz Rent-A-Car went into bankruptcy. So this is one of the reasons why Senator Elizabeth Warren is pushing this Accountable Capitalism Act, because if you had to, for a big company, it has to be $1 billion, not a little company, a big company, if you have 40% of the board of directors be employees, then you can fight that.
Okay, I want to thank Larry Bridwell there. He's a professor at International Business at Pace University. Mahan, final question here. We've seen how the Reddit phenomenon has caused everyday people to buy and sell stocks.
Yeah.
How do you think people are faring when it comes to alternative markets? We're seeing, for example, what has happened in the cryptocurrency market with, let's say, Bitcoin and the likes. Prices have soared.
Yeah.
Do you think similar examples are out there as we have witnessed with the Reddit saga?
Well, you know, events like this can create the illusion that this can gain real traction. My personal view is that this is still an outlier. It's a fringe event. And yes, there are equivalents of it in all walks of life, even in politics. Look, the New Zealand, the Australian terrorist who killed all those people in New Zealand back in 2019, he was the member of this alternative chatting forum called Chan, which is quite similar to Reddit, but it has a political content, whereas, you know, Reddit is about social stuff and, you know, it's kind of a different category. But yet, you know, examples are out there where forums like Reddit or its equivalent in the political world can manipulate public opinion on certain issues and then create a very spectacular event. But it's still an outlier. You know, it's not affecting public opinion writ large.
Okay, so thank you very much for that. We appreciate
you're
it. Mahan Abedin, Current Affairs on Impact Analyst. Many thanks for your thoughts. Now, you also thank Larry Bridwell also for being with us. Now, our other guest in the program, the one we featured in our reports, he gave a really good example of how Wall Street manipulates the average person. Let's hear him as to how that happens in his own words.
One other example of how this is actually looks structurally, take the case of BlackRock Incorporated, right? The largest asset manager that, together with the other of the big three, State Street and Vanguard, together they have about $18 trillion of assets under their management. I think that's larger than the nation of China itself, the second largest economy on the planet. You know, and the way that BlackRock sort of rose to its prominence was through this, what was called Aladdin. That stands for Asset Liability Debt and Derivative Investments Network. That's about 6,000 super high-tech computers all pooled together with a team of about 2,000 IT specialists, mathematicians. It was actually, I believe, a joint venture with Google to be able to run these, for the asset managers, run these kind of passive management versus these, having traders that are involved in sort of active trading processes. Instead, you let the computers run it, and it's a much more lucrative system for the likes of BlackRock. I guarantee those types of systems would be integrated with social media such that these kind of operations that you're seeing in the case of GameStop and the Robinhood controversy in general, I guarantee that that just gives an indication of how things are lined up at Wall Street, which is designed to fleece your everyday citizen, your common investor. That's how the mafia works, and certainly that's how these guys operate as well.
So this is a bit more complicated and controlling than what many perceive the stock market to be. But ultimately, the market manipulation comes in many different forms that blurs the lines of whether the investment in a stock is based on real facts or not.
The world we live in is becoming smaller and is operating ever more on a real-time basis, with the world able to connect and trade at the click of a button from the comfort of an armchair at home. Yet for decades, and even maybe centuries, certain niche markets were dominated by the powerhouses in the corridors of stock exchanges around the world. Yet the Reddit movement, which saw everyday traders rock the world of the hedge fund managers and everyday bankers, demonstrated that the Wolf of Wall Street has now turned into a pack. Yet the pack has changed from the elite traders into everyday people, something that cost billions and put many noses out of joint. Already laws and measures are being taken to avoid a repeat of the GameStop saga. But will manipulating the law to favor the stock markets simply motivate the many to find new and more adventurous ways to break the system? Only time will tell. That's about all the time we have on this week's episode. So on behalf of myself, Kavitha Hathaway, and the whole team here on Economic Divide, stay safe.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
آقای آمد خدمت پیغمبر اکرم، یا رسول الله اذنی موعظم کن. فرمود گوش میدی موعظت کنم و الا این
همه. Once a person came to Prophet Muhammad and asked him to give him some pieces of advice. Prophet Muhammad for three times asked that man, are you absolutely ready to listen to my advice? The man replied, yes, the Prophet of Allah. The Prophet stated, think deeply before doing anything in your life, because haste in action will bring regrets. From this statement of Prophet Muhammad, we understand that haste in action will have consequences, even if it is a religious matter. Sometimes haste in religious matters will lead to polytheism. We have to be more patient so that when the right moment and place come, Allah gives the answer to our calls. The opposite of haste is tasabbut, which means to do the things based on deep thoughts and preciseness.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasser Rafi'i. To find out more about this program and our other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Detroit City Council doesn't care about the interests of the people they serve. They are more inclined to fill their own pockets. Not only is this funding a direct attack on BLM protesters, but it is also inappropriate and disrespectful to Detroiters who are living in poverty, says Sammy Lewis Ryder in an article published under the heading, Detroit will use $200,000 in taxpayer money to fund claim against BLM group. Here's more on that. Detroit Will Breathe was formed days after the mass uprising following the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery. Despite the hyper-militarized tools and tactics used by Detroit police on anti-racist protesters, in an attempt to stop the movement, activists kept mobilizing against police brutality. Instead of trying to meet the demands that Detroit Will Breathe developed with the community, DPD continued to use excessive force and brutality. Following a summer of state violence, Detroit Will Breathe was able to file a lawsuit against the city of Detroit. Plaintiffs are using the city for damages and violations to their First and Fourth Amendment rights. In addition to the lawsuit, a restraining order against DPD was put in place for 14 days until a judge granted a preliminary injunction for the remainder of the case, stipulating that the police are no longer allowed to use chalk holes, rubber bullets, tear gas, pepper spray, batons, shields, force, or vehicles as weapons against protesters. Protesters now cannot be arrested without probable cause. Detroit Police Chief James Craig responded to the ruling and stated that it wouldn't stop how the department handles demonstrations. While the lawsuit and restraining order might have provided some legal cushion room in protecting protesters against physical violence, DPD and the city continue to utilize intimidation tactics and political revenge against activists. In response to Detroit Will Breathe lawsuit, the city filed a counterclaim for civil conspiracy demanding that any damages are to be paid by individual members of Detroit Will Breathe. City officials disclosed that the claim was only filed in order to get Detroit Will Breathe to drop their lawsuit. Detroit Mayor Duggan stated that the claim is an attempt to suppress their speech. Detroit Will Breathe is fighting to have this baseless claim dismissed but continues to face legal obstacles. Recently, on January 26, Detroit City Council voted 5-4 to approve additional funding for the counterclaim. In one of the poorest cities in the nation, $200,000 of taxpayer money was paid out to Clark Hill Law Firm, despite the fact that activists and residents repeatedly asked Detroit City Council to vote down the contract. The additional funds were requested by the Duggan administration and the city's top lawyer, Lawrence Garcia, the same that the city council approved this contract. 238 out of 245 cases against BLM protesters were dismissed due to lack of evidence. The council vote is motivated by political retaliation and is being used to intimidate and suppress the protesters. Aside from vengeance, council members were also bribed by Clark Hill. Roy McAllister, a former police officer, was the only council member that voted in favor of the contract that did not receive a gift from the law firm. Detroit City Council doesn't care about the interests of the people they serve. They are more inclined to fill their own pockets. Not only is this funding a direct attack on BLM protesters, but it is also inappropriate and disrespectful to Detroiters who are living in poverty. Detroit residents are constantly told there isn't enough money for the resources they need: housing, healthcare, water, education, transportation, and recreation services lack proper and sustained funding. Housing alone is a major crisis in Detroit. Since 2009, $600 million has been stolen from Detroit homeowners in illegal property tax inflation, on foreclosures, and still, City Council continues to throw away taxpayer money. City Council's priorities are concentrated on displacing black and brown people through state violence, rather than protecting the 85% black community that they serve. In addition to this egregious counterclaim, DPD is asking for another $40 million to be added to their bloated $330 million police budget. If City Council approves this budget increase, it will be even clearer to Detroiters that their lives don't matter and that there are no consequences for police brutality. Detroit Will Breathe demands that the city refuses to reward DPD additional funding for their violence and hostility, instead puts the money toward resources and services for the community.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask his blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station. Choo-choo-ka-choo, it's the Youth Station for you. I am Mullah Farhaydar, and here in the studio we have with us the one, the only...
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters. I am Zainab's twin.
You have a twin? I mean, Zainab has a twin?
Yeah.
This is so awkward right now.
Exactly.
I've built... all that rapport with Sister Zainab. All right, so in the last episode, we discussed, we were talking about five potential
threats.
Yes, threats against Islam and the Muslim world generally.
In today's world.
In today's world and for the future. So we talked about two of them. We said materialism, justification of evil through Islamic texts.
I love the way you said evil.
Evil, yeah. And then the third one, inshallah, today I'd like to present to you. It is deviant sects.
How is that a modern problem?
Well, because they're being created.
Right? Oh, modern.
I mean, okay, put yourself in the eyes of the, kind of in the chair of the taghut of, I don't know, the British or the Americans or the CIA, FBI, whoever. Put yourself in their chair. What would you want to do right now to Islam? You'd want to create a deviant sect, wouldn't you?
And to confuse...
completely confuse
the
them,
fudge
right?
out of Muslims.
And it would be a plan that you've been plotting for a long, long time, because these things don't happen overnight. You have to go phase by phase. You have to convince them of one thing, then of another thing, and then the next year another thing, and keep pushing it until eventually they've strayed so far... from the pure Muhammadan Islam that it, when they turn around and look at it, it looks strange to them. We have to remember, right, this beautiful and terrifying hadith, which tells us the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wa sallam said that Islam came a stranger, it will leave a stranger, and it will return a stranger. We should not be surprised that when Imam al-Hujjat al-Qa'im, the Mahdi, comes, when he reappears, people will not recognize him. They won't recognize Islam itself, and they will say, this is not Islam, when they see the things that he does, because they've become so disconnected from it. So definitely these, and I don't know if you've heard or done any research into British Shiism. I mean, this is something which is close to my heart because I'm from the UK, but this is a phenomenon that really is a sinister scheme of the enemy, and it's as it's unraveling, it's becoming more and more clear that it really is deviating a major kind of portion of the Shia world. So, yeah, deviant sects. Number three, I'd say, is deviant sects. What do you think is number four?
Ulul Amal. I know it sounds like I'm obsessing over this, but Ulul Amal is, again, one of those things that...
Oh, wait, you said that was number three. Sorry, I forgot that.
No...
okay, we'll put it as number four.
Yeah, number four. Okay, number one was materialism.
Materialism.
Number two was...
justification of evil.
Yeah. Number three was what you just said.
Deviant sects.
Number four would be طول الأمل.
طول الأمل. Can you expand on it? Can you?
Yes, it means... okay, it's different from being ambitious, right? It means having far-fetched, unachievable... dreams.
Like pipe dreams?
What are those?
I looked it up yesterday.
Oh, somebody mentioned slut. It. What does that mean?
It's a dream that you have and you just put it in the back of the closet and then you just kind of say, yeah, I'm going to become this one day, but you never really do anything and it's just like unattainable kind of thing because you're not acting on it. You know, like the illustrator who says, I'm going to get a part-time job and then they start doing a part-time job and then they say, I'm a part-time illustrator, and then they carry on working that part-time job even though they hate it because they need to pay the rent. And then every day they're getting home really tired, so they don't get to do any illustrations, and maybe they used to do it an hour a day, then it goes down to 30 minutes a day, then they just give up. And then after a year or two, when anybody asks them, what do you do? They don't say illustrator anymore. They say secretary or whatever they are, which is really depressing, isn't it?
Why does it sound like you're speaking from first-hand experience?
This is something that a lot of people have, right? They have pipe dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but طول الأمل is different from that even. Okay. It's the sort of desire and dream that you could even be chasing in your life, but you're chasing it so badly that it's distracting you and it's occupying you and it's engaging you on such a level that you're distracted from your true objective in life.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you pursue to the point of obsession / worship.
Okay.
You know, like...
Like to become rich?
To become rich.
Like to
have a certain degree even.
Uh-huh.
You know?
To be famous.
To become famous, to marry a certain person, for my child to have a certain position or degree or...
Mm-hmm.
thing in life.
To conquer the world or a certain country or world. Some people might have that.
Okay, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing about you'd one
position
would
of authority.
Mm-hmm. They want to
become.
One would ask, what is so detrimenting about having dreams and chasing them? It's actually fine, but when it's not aligned with the true objective of our lives. And it's not in accordance with the purpose that we've been designed for, then things will begin to fall apart
right.
in this world and obviously in the next.
Yeah, the youths listening, and they're thinking, what is the purpose of our lives?
Mm.
How do you know what the purpose of our life is?
Mm.
Just a quick verse, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ
mm-hmm.
And we did not create the jinn or the humans except that they worship, except that they serve.
Exactly.
Yeah, so...
Sometimes my aspiration in this world is to... I have a passion, right? To go to war-torn countries and serve underprivileged people.
That was my dream. Well, not to serve underprivileged people, but to take interviews and journalism.
Oh, okay.
You wanted to go to war-torn countries? Is that what you wanted to do? You wanted to go to war-torn countries?
Sure.
That's what I wanted to do.
So that could be my passion, the whole serving people that are, you know, not as privileged as I am and are living in a war-torn country and are suffering. And
it's a noble dream to have.
Exactly. And that I could even set that as my life goal mm-hmm. because I feel like it's going to make the world a better place. I could even be a doctor. I could aspire to become a doctor, a radio host,
engineer.
A preacher, an engineer, any of that.
A pilot,
but set Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as the axis of my goal in life, right? That could make it a noble goal no matter what it is.
Are you saying that it's good to have those goals? Or no, we need to analyze whether it's in sync with what Allah wants us to do.
I think it should be in sync. And when we try so hard to make Allah our priority, we realize that some goals are in no way, shape, or form compatible
that
with Islamic values.
Sister.
Because youth sometimes are caught in this quandary, wondering that, okay, I'm going to choose my major. What's wrong with that major, so-and-so major? It's not haram. I won't be doing anything haram, this and that. But then are you thinking to yourself, how are you serving humanity?
Yeah.
How are you serving your soul? How is this going to affect your afterlife? If it encompasses your life so much that you will be forever distracted from the true objective of your life.
Yeah. For the young brothers and sisters out there, because this idea of serving Allah, becoming in sync with the goal that Allah wants us to be in sync with, that might sound a little bit too far away and unattainable or too even vague. So I just want to say this hadith, it's so beautiful. So, Nabi Musa,
Prophet Musa, alayhi salam,
So he says to Allah, "Oh Allah, if you were the creation, what would you do?" Allah says, "I would serve humanity." Because you mentioned serving humanity, and it's just, I don't know, it's just beautiful. Okay, so we've got four of them down. What's the fifth one? Fifth and final threat to Islam. My turn?
Yeah, that's a serious threat. It really is.
Silence?
Even worse, honestly. What would the Islamic Ummah do?
Okay, I'll say something which might sound a little bit simple. But it is the crux of everything. Being distant from the Quran. If Muslims don't get connected to the Quran, if they don't base what their understanding is of Islam on the Quran, and of course the Ahlul Bayt, they're one and the same, it will have a severely detrimental impact. And we've seen it in the last few years. We've seen it, right, where people are just getting their Islam as an inheritance from speakers and from their parents, you know, and they haven't actually reflected themselves. They haven't thought about it themselves. So, yeah, I'd say that was threat number five.
How is it a modern thing?
How's it a modern thing? Well, it will affect the future if they don't get connected now, right?
But what are the modern elements and circumstances that could be contributing to Muslims being distant from the Quran?
It's not so much a threat of being distanced from the Quran itself, but the fact that so many ideologies are being poured into the minds of the masses from social media and from movies and sitcoms and their phones, you know, because they're getting so many of their ideals now from other sources.
It's being replaced.
Yeah, there is a vacuum in the heart of a human being, right, where they want to know certain truths and realities. What are the ultimate truths? And they are constantly being fed these things through memes and through WhatsApp messages and, you know, all sorts of things. Now, what happens is we start to base our understanding of reality on precisely that, because we've allowed the vacuum of... It's like going back to the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he says, "I stood at the gate of my heart and let nothing inside except Allah." Right? We're not doing that. Our hearts are open. Like, we're scrolling through our phones night and day whenever we get a free chance to just lie back, right? And we are filling our minds. Now, I'll give you an example, right? So there is a statement that you might just pop up on your screen because somebody shares it and they think it's fantastical, you know, and it goes like this, that, and you've probably heard it, there is no absolute reality. Ooh, right. And you hear like philosophical statements like this, but if nobody's there to kind of guide you through it, you know, you won't understand the tragic flaw in such a statement. There is no such thing as absolute reality, or no thing is absolute truth. Okay, but this statement itself, it destroys itself, because it means that that statement itself is not absolute reality either, which means that, you know, it obliterates the idea itself. So there must be an absolute reality, right? But these kinds of things are going into people's minds, pluralism and materialism and things. So yeah, if we are not getting close to the Quran and getting our core fundamental ideals from there, it will cause a lot of detriment to the Ummah going forward.
Definitely. So we've counted five threats, that 5 points that could threaten Islam in the future. Number one was materialism. Number two was justification of evil. Number three was...
Deviant sects.
Number four was Tul al-Amal, far-fetched dreams. And number five was...
Distance from the Quran.
Do you think we can, like, you know, create little solutions for it?
As for the first one, materialism...
Death.
Oh, good. Yeah, remember death.
Yeah, exactly.
Islam is all about...
We should really normalize death, because it's so taboo and it's so scary and, oh, let's not talk about it, and why are you so depressed, and are you suicidal? But in Islam, the reality of Islam, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, whoever thinks about death every hour of their lives will be among the shuhada of the war of Badr.
Subhanallah.
Which is a huge deal, right? Thinking about death is a value in Islam.
Visiting graveyards
exactly.
is a value.
Mm-hmm. Just to, like you said, remind yourself that this is all going to be gone in a blink of an eye. And it would be like, I'm dead now. What is all that materialistic things I cultivated and collected for myself going to do for me?
Mm.
So that's my... Yeah.
Imam Ali alayhi salam says, with death, the world ends.
Justification of evil.
Justification of evil, right? Don't use the deen to justify evil. Don't do it, guys. You're not gonna save yourself from the fire of hell by justifying it through Islam and, you know, bringing up a hadith or something to justify something which is wrong. Your heart will tell you that it's wrong.
If anything, it would make it worse to justify it through Islam.
Mm. And one quick thing that I'd say here is, which applies to point number three, which is deviant sects as well, so we can actually tackle both of these, is identify the rogue scholars. Identify who they are.
Mm.
And always take things back to Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader, and to the marjas, because they are the senior most authorities.
Mm.
You know, get your understanding of Islam from them, and particularly from the leader, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Don't so much rely on these mid-level scholars. See if they're echoing those same sentiments of the Quran, of the Ahlul Bayt, and of the leader, the wali of the time. But if they're not, then be cautious of them at the very least. So the fourth one is Tulul Amal.
Far-fetched dreams. Again, death.
Death?
Yeah. Death is a solution to that too. Think about the fact that you're going to have to return to your Lord sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the state you're creating for yourself for that return?
Mm-hmm. And distancing oneself from the Quran, the fifth and final point, the solution is...
death.
No, definitely a solution as well. But I would just say read the Quran. It's a book. Before you die, read it at least once, you know, in your own language. Try to understand it.
Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says upon a Muslim to read at least 50 verses of the Quran each day.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you can't do 50, do 30. If you can't do 30, do 20. If you can't do 20, do a page.
Do a word.
Just
do
a word, line. A sense. But really, you know, invest yourself into it and make it a thing.
Another point there is Imam Ali alayhi salam said, don't read the Quran to finish the chapter.
Mm.
Don't ever do that. And this is something that we often do. We try to finish the Quran. We try to finish the chapter. Don't do it, guys. Every verse, in fact, that makes you, you know, puts up a little light bulb in your mind, stop and think about it.
Linger on it.
Yeah, linger on
it. Yeah,
one
absolutely.
Verse is enough if you contemplate over it. That's all we have time for today from myself and from Sister Zainab's twin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.